This is Radio Times. I'm Artie Moscoane. Millions of Americans will be fighting traffic, piling onto trains, and dealing with long lines at the airport today and tomorrow so they can celebrate Thanksgiving with their family. It's one of the most popular holidays of the year. But families being what they are, sometimes these get-togethers can lead to tense interactions, reignite old wounds, and lead to conflict. We were thinking about the Cheney family Thanksgiving this year, as sisters Liz and Mary are in the throes of a very public and personal fight over same-sex marriage. But they're not the only household where family members disagree about social and political issues, and that's our topic for today's Radio Times. Let me introduce our two guests. Joining us here in our Philadelphia studio is Peter Goldenthal. He's a family psychologist with a private practice here in the Philadelphia area, author of a book called Beyond Sibling Rivalry and Why Can't We Get Along? Healing Adult Sibling Relationships. He's also an associate professor of psychology at Chestnut Hill College. And Peter Goldenthal, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
It is always nice to see you, Marty, and to be here.
Thanks so much. And to you, Lindsay Hoffman, welcome to Radio Times, Associate Professor of Communication and Political Science at the University of Delaware, also Coordinator of Research in Politics and Technology at UD's Center for Political Communication. And Lindsay Hoffman, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Nice to have you both here. And I want to say, before we get into family conflicts, I do want to say that I think Thanksgiving is a wonderful time for families to get together. And I think for the most part, people, and I'm looking at you, Peter, people are on their best behavior. I mean, they want to bring goodwill and Thanksgiving to this family holiday. Would you agree with that?
I absolutely agree. I absolutely agree. People really make an effort.
And as we know, making an effort from coming from all parts of the country to be together.
Well, people make a physical effort to come together, and people make an interpersonal effort to have it be a nice day if they can. People don't come to the Thanksgiving table looking to pick a fight.
Right. And Lindsay, I'm just curious about, even a personal question, how you're going to celebrate Thanksgiving tomorrow.
Well, I actually was intending to be on the road today, but because of the weather, we're actually delaying our trip back to the Midwest until tomorrow. I was going to be on the road, but now I'm just waiting for the weather to pass.
And would you agree with Peter that for the most part, families want to get together and want to spend good time together over the Thanksgiving holiday?
Yeah, but I mean, I think that, when you get together with your families, especially if you see them only rarely, it can bring up old wounds and old scars. I think that where the trouble comes in is when people come to the Thanksgiving table or the holiday table with the intention to persuade or convince their family members of some type of position. I think that when you begin to try and force your opinion on others, that's when things start to get uncomfortable.
You've done some research on sort of family styles and how there are several kinds of family styles that you have observed about how families deal with political issues. Can you flesh that out for us, Lindsay?
Sure. It's amazing how influential families are on our political identity. As early as age 5, children are able to identify figures of authority and that they need to be respected. Our political identity is formed really early. And even the way families communicate with each other, these family communication patterns, even if they're not talking about politics, simply the way that they talk to each other can influence people's political adulthood. So, for example, in families where obedience is stressed, where children are expected to be obedient to their parents and social harmony is stressed, we tend to see those individuals having less political activity and political engagement as adults. But in households where communication is open and children are encouraged to explore ideas and express opinions, and it's not the same kind of hierarchical order, we tend to see that those children actually become much more politically knowledgeable as well as more politically engaged.
I want to go. I'll pick up on that, Lindsay, but let me go back to you, Peter. As a family psychologist, I guess we shouldn't be surprised of people that parents' political beliefs or perhaps even the way they talk about politics is very influential in a family.
Well, I don't have too much to add except to agree. It's absolutely true, and the typical pattern is either loyal adherence to parents' point of view or rigid and vehement rejection. In other words, the one side of the coin to the other side of the coin.
Nothing in the middle?
Well,
or?
As I said, that's the typical pattern. It's the independent thinkers who end up in the middle. So that without the knee-jerk reaction, if you will, is either to, you know, my father voted this way, my grandfather voted this way, maybe my great-grandfather voted this way and I vote this way, or I won't.
Right.
Sort of that rebellious. And the ideal, obviously, is to help people think
find
things out
ground.
For themselves. The ideal for, I suppose, political scientists, but certainly for psychologists.
Well, and I wonder, Lindsay, too, when you look at these different styles within families, do you see the children of more, I guess, open, expressive, less follow-my-lead type families, that they end up being Republicans or Democrats or conservatives or liberals or libertarians? Have you looked at how those political beliefs evolve?
I haven't looked at that specifically, but because, you know, as far as I'm concerned, the important thing is that kind of open discussion encourages engagement with politics, regardless of which side it's on. I can say, though, that, you know, in terms of political socialization, which is this process of children being socialized into the political world, that parents have the most influence on party affiliation. That's the most long-lasting influence of the family on children. And when I teach, I teach courses on media and politics, and I always ask my students, you know, how many of you have the same party affiliation as your parents or as your primary caregiver? And it's easily 90% of the time, and that's pretty consistent.
Which, again, I would think, Peter, makes a lot of sense. I mean, that's where we have our first exposure to so many things from our parents, from our family.
And for many people, it's not really thought through a lot. So it's almost like what church you go to or what synagogue you go to. Sort of it becomes tradition. And unless there's a reason to verge from the tradition, we follow the tradition.
But there are families, and you know, in my introduction, I mentioned the Liz and Mary Cheney. I mean, there are families where children really come to very different conclusions about social issues, political issues, other kinds of issues as well. And I'm just, it's one of the reasons we did the show, because they're having this very public dispute about same-sex marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Your thoughts about that, Peter?
Well, that's...
And it's hard to judge other people's families.
Yes. I mean, well, there are a couple of things about that. I mean, certainly same-sex marriage is not just a political point of view. It's personal and it's family and it's very deep psychologically, so that I could imagine a person agreeing with how they were brought up in everything else. But that becomes how do you want to live your life? Mm. And without getting too specific, I think the thing that has caught people's attention is the divergence and the heat of the argument rather than the light cast by the argument. And as we were chatting before, I mean, the question that occurs to me and that I sometimes pose to people when they're in these kind of difficult, similar but not identical
right.
situations, if they ask my advice about, you know, should I take this stand or should I not? In this case, I suppose it would be the person who's, you know, should I politically oppose something my sibling is doing in her life? It's not my place to tell people what to do, but what I ask is if you could imagine yourself way in the future, not next month or even next year, but 20 years or 30 years, you know, near the end of your life and you look back, where would you be? Would it have been worth it? And sometimes that helps.
Right.
And sometimes it also helps about the Thanksgiving table disputes. I mean, I certainly agree. People sometimes come with an agenda, and if it's of interest, we could talk about sort of what the dynamics are underlying that agenda. But I think it's often a useful question to say, maybe you feel inclined to convince somebody to your point of view that they should be more conservative or more liberal or on a specific point, but what are the implications of that, and is it worth it?
Is it worth it, meaning is it worth it to our relationship?
Is it worth it to our relationship?
Lindsay, I'd be curious about your thoughts.
Well, you know, I think that it's important to keep in mind here that not all families have that unified, both parents are Republicans or both parents are Democrats, and, you know, it's kind of this clear, so political socialization isn't this, you know, as much as the research out there suggests that there are certain patterns, it's often a lot messier than that. My own background, part of the reason I study what I do is because my parents come from very different ends of the ideological spectrum. And I was always very curious as to how people dealt with that. And it turns out that that's relatively uncommon. There are few cases where couples can continue to be so divergent in their political ideology. And in fact, over time, usually they become more and more like each other, which may explain why my parents ultimately got divorced. and one of them literally moved to Canada. So they became more extreme in their, I think, political ideologies. But I think that family dynamic was so powerful and fascinating to me that it's really what led me to study this to begin with.
And as a child between, I guess, these two political poles, I'm not sure how intense the disagreements were or what they were about, Lindsay, but did you feel like you had to choose sides, or did it help you sort of understand the psychological dynamics of people's political beliefs and ideas?
Well, you know, I grew up in one of the households in those family communication patterns that we would call more protective, where that we didn't really talk about politics. So it was about obedience. It wasn't about open communication. So those differences weren't necessarily overt. They just became clear later.
What's interesting, Peter, is I think, I mean, all families have a certain kind of style. I mean, there's some families that fight all the time, but they actually love each other and they mm-hmm. get along, and it's just their style is much more combative. Others, perhaps more like Lindsay's family, maybe a little more protective, where you know they're tough issues and you just avoid them. And I guess don't want to, you know, start a fight about stuff. And I guess I just wanted to sort of acknowledge, I guess, the fact that there is this enormous diversity and that families figure out how to talk to each other for better or for worse.
Okay. There is a huge diversity, and I don't want to look on the dark side.
Right.
But sometimes not talking is protective, and sometimes, if you look at it developmentally, kind of from the perspective of how does that affect a child, it's worse because young children, and I'm not being particular about anybody's right. family, certainly, can worry more if there's a sort of unstated, unlabeled, under-the-surface tension. So if things are not talked about because it really is okay, you know, we differ politically, and it's not a big deal. It's fine. We respect each other. It's fine, so we don't have to get into it. That's probably comfortable for everybody.
Right.
If it's we don't talk about it because we're so angry, that's not such a comfortable situation.
Lindsay, we have to say goodbye to you. Any final words from you?
You know, I just, in thinking, obviously I'm going to go back and visit my family. I'm very close with my family. And I think it's just about respect and about mm-hmm. understanding that you're not going to convince anyone of your point of view, particularly if they hold a very strong opposite point of view. So you might as well find something else to talk about.
Well, fair enough, and happy Thanksgiving to you, Lindsay Hoffman. Thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. From the University of Delaware, Peter Goldenthal staying with us for the rest of the hour. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
AT&T Productions, Philadelphia's all-comedy theater company, supports WHYY. From the creative team that brought you This Is the Week That Is and our show of shows, AT&T Productions celebrates the holidays with its newest original production, The Big Time, New Vaudeville for the Holidays, featuring Jennifer Childs, Scott Greer, and Dave Jadico. The Big Time reunites Philadelphia's comedy dream team and brings the steamer trunk circuit into the 21st century. Tickets at 1812productions.org.
Celebrate the Jewish Festival of Lights with Leonard Nimoy and the Western Wind. Join us for a delightful and moving hour of songs sung by the Western Wind and holiday stories told by the inimitable Mr. Spock of Star Trek fame. It's Leonard Nimoy and the Western Wind in Hanukkah and Story and Song from PRI.
Tonight at 10 on WHYY.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Next time on Here and Now, the holiday film fair that will cap off a good year at the movies.
I think we're going to end up looking at what we've seen this year and be quite amazed at the depth and power and creativity of some of the films that have come out.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
this afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. We're talking about what can happen around that Thanksgiving table when family members get together and sometimes disagree or have old wounds that are reignited on personal issues, family issues, political and social issues. And our guest again is Peter Goldenthal, a family psychologist here in the Philadelphia area, associate professor of psychology at Chestnut Hill College. And if you have any questions or comments or stories that you want to tell, that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. I think it is interesting to sort of underscore the fact that people don't come together for Thanksgiving in order to fight some old family fight. But sometimes that stuff happens. And sometimes it's a matter of a button being pushed or just sometimes I think for some people it's just seeing that member of the family that maybe you haven't seen since last Thanksgiving. And there it goes again. These old scripts that seem to reappear. Would you say for a lot of families that whatever they fight about, it's sort of the same fight? It might have different things, but it's sort of essentially the same fight.
One way to look at it is who's fighting in the family, because it's rarely a free-for-all. You know, if it's, let's say there are 10 people or 12 people or 15 people or 30 people, it's not like the gladiators in the arena and they're all going at it, but they're dyads and sometimes triads, and it's often the same dyads and the same fight and the same third person either getting anxious and trying to calm it down or getting drawn in on one side or the other, and the fight at the level underneath the surface is always about the same thing.
Yes.
It's always about power and hierarchy and some version of you'd never believe that I was as smart as you and I'm going to prove that I am, or everybody's always been trying to push me around, or nobody listens to me and I'll show you. As I said before, I think it's really rare that somebody gets pumped up for Thanksgiving and says, I'm going to go in there and I'm really going to let them have it. But it's if people haven't thought through that they don't want that to happen, and, you know, I'm far from the first person to say that old wounds get opened up and old experiences get rekindled. I mean, that's pretty much universal.
Sure, sure. I mean, that's what literature is about
that's
in many
right.
ways. I often feel, this is a personal statement as well, is sometimes being with family, you feel like you can be 64 years old and feel like a child. There's something about something regressive about being with one's family. How come?
Yeah, you took the words out of my mouth. Yes.
But
I was sitting here wondering, should I talk about being regressive? And I think it's actually more than feeling like being a child. I think in the moment, often one is a child. There are a lot of possible explanations. I mean, one that I find helpful sort of is to think about at different stages of our life, we go through different kinds of major issues that we have to kind of figure out. And then we move to the next, and they're sort of universal. And then we move to the next stage because we've pretty much figured out that earlier one. But I'm trying to emphasize that I'm here talking with my hands. But we've only pretty much figured it out. We've not 100% figured it out. So it's still there. And it can be still there in a good way, meaning it helps us have empathy for our children or for other people, and it can be there in a vulnerable way so that if the right spark, excuse the cliche here, but
sure.
if the right spark happens, it bursts into flame. So, and we do literally regress.
And we do. And especially if there is, I guess, a parent there or even the ghost of a parent, I'm assuming, that also, and if we're talking about siblings here, that also can sort of bring back some of those old wounds.
What you're talking about is the person or the internal image of the person, right? So they don't even have to have died for the media ghost. Maybe they're just not at the table because, you know, their geography or something. Yes, it's that image and the feelings. And so except for those unique families, almost unique, you know, the happy families that are all alike, they don't have to worry about this stuff. But for not a few people, most people, it's worth thinking about it ahead of time,
right.
I think.
But it doesn't seem like Thanksgiving is a time to resolve these issues. I mean,
no, it is not.
Okay.
No, it is not. either way before mm-hmm. or way after Thanksgiving. For the psychologically minded person who knows their issues, Thanksgiving is not a bad time to take mental notes.
What?
And not just, here's the challenging part. We all love to take notes on other people's behavior, other people's issues. That often doesn't help so much. It's a great time to take notes on our own stuff.
So how am I reacting to this?
How am I feeling? How am I feeling? And what triggered that feeling? And mental note, actually, there's nothing wrong with a physical note. You know, everybody has got their smartphone now. You can kind of, under
note
the napkin,
to self.
Note to self to think about later.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I'm curious about those situations where you just feel like the conversation is going in a place that's a kind of a combustible place. Does it make sense to just bite your tongue, change the topic? As you said, sometimes these protective things are signs of problems in a family.
Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure if you're asking about if you are involved in the discussion and
right.
you feel it heating up or you notice.
Right.
If you are involved, sometimes it's really hard to say, let's just change the subject, because if the other person is getting worked up, that
right.
may, you know, feed it. It may be a time to sort of calm things down and say, well, you know, good point.
Right.
But if you're not involved and you're the elder statesman of the family or you're a person who doesn't get drawn into the conflicts and you think you can change the subject,
right.
why not?
Yeah.
Why not try?
And why not say, you know, this is probably not the time and place, but let's see if we could have a civil conversation somewhere else?
If you are,
if that's
possible. Who are you being? Are you being one of the two people who's arguing?
Or? Right. I mean, that sounds very rational, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. I think it's hard for the two people who are, you know, arguing, unless they catch it early.
Right.
You know, it's if you can catch it early, there's lots of possibilities to say, hey, you know, this is an interesting debate, but why don't, you know, right. after dinner we'll talk about it or another time. If you're the observer, it depends on, you know, there's lots and lots been written, and I know you've had lots of guests talking about family roles.
Yes.
It depends on your role in the family. And if your role is conducive to you saying, hey, this sounds like it'd be a great discussion for another time, sure. But if your role is that typically you're the one who says that and everybody stares at you and says, no, don't, you know, why not be self-protective and not do that? In other words, being a rescuer, which is a term that mm-hmm. family psychologists use sometimes, mm-hmm. is often a trap because, you know, everybody doesn't want you to be the rescuer.
Right. They want it.
So sometimes the best you can do is just not get into it and look for an opportunity to, you know, say, hey, seen any good movies lately? Or what about the Flyers? You know, anything.
And we have a guest who's going to join us in just a moment or two. I'm curious about these other roles. They're rescuers. What are some of the other roles that the people, that probably siblings play within families?
Well, one of the roles that comes up a lot is the victim role.
Right.
And my perspective on these roles and how they lead to problems is, and it's actually sort of part of my broader perspective on how things work with people, is that we all carry lots of anxiety about lots of things. And the anxiety doesn't actually cause the big problem. I mean, it is uncomfortable.
Sure.
But what causes the big problem is what we try to do to make sure that we don't get anxious. So a person who's anxious that they might be the victim again and who decides they're going to be the bully instead, you know, the best defense is a good offense, it's their effort to take care of themselves that's causing the problem. And a lot of these roles are manifestations of that. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody kind of knows that bullies are people who are afraid of being bullied often. So self-awareness and sort of tuning into what you think might happen and what your fear of what might happen and doing some kind of what are my options is extremely helpful in these kind of situations. And if you do it beforehand, then you can enjoy what's positive about seeing your family.
Well, we're talking about family dynamics, getting ready for Thanksgiving when families get together for that Thanksgiving meal. And again, Peter Goldenthal is our guest. He's a family psychologist here in the Philadelphia area, author of two books, one called Beyond Sibling Rivalry and Why Can't We Get Along? Healing Adult Sibling relationships. He's an associate professor of psychology at Chestnut Hill College. Any questions or comments to join our conversation? That phone number again is 1-888-477-9499. And you can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. Joining us now is Tom Merce. He's digital editor for Lancaster Newspapers and Lancaster Online, works as a guide for about.com. And Tom Merce, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks, Marty. It's good to be here.
Nice to have you here. And I'm looking at a piece you wrote for about.com, How to Talk Politics and Stay Friends. Is this a personal issue for you as well?
Well, I sort of expected it to be a personal issue. I wrote this about a year ago at the height of the 2012 presidential race, about a week before, actually. So when I was sitting down thinking about this issue, I was really looking ahead to what Thanksgiving and Christmas would be and what our family gatherings would look like under both an Obama and a Romney presidency. Both I and my wife are blessed to have, you know, families that are big and opinionated and diverse. We have, you know, Tea Party Republicans and lefty liberals and independent swing voters. So I was kind of looking at how this all might play out when I sat down to write some of these tips to enjoying and talking, being able to talk politics in a civil manner.
And has your family, your very diverse family, as you describe it, Tom, have you been able to have, you know, hearty and but not personal political conversations?
Oh, sure, absolutely. One of the keys, I think, to doing that is, as I mentioned in this article, is talking and sort of steering the conversation toward facts, anticipating the conversation and the issues that might come up. You talked earlier about gay marriage, things like legalization of marijuana and health care, and government spending. Those are the sort of issues that tend to come up in my families. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I found that it's helpful, you know, as I mentioned here, to do a little bit of research ahead of time. You know, if you can sort of sense that the amount of U.S. debt China really owns is going to come up during your Thanksgiving dinner, you know, it would be handy to go to the Treasury and actually look up that number. So for a talking point, to sort of steer that mm-hmm. conversation toward facts and not opinions, I found that pretty helpful, yes.
You also suggest disagreeing respectfully, and I think we're all in favor of that. Sometimes that's easier said than done.
Right.
And you say don't shake your head in disgust, don't interrupt, don't sigh heavily like Al Gore did during his debate with George W. Bush. Don't roll your eyes. So what do you do to disagree respectfully?
What do you
do? You just exhaled there, Tom.
A plate of turkey and a slice of pumpkin pie, so you're not able to talk. But understand, you know, I think you had Lindsay Hoffman on earlier, and I think understanding one of the things she said is really key to that. And she said, you know, you're not at the end of the day, you're not really going to convince anyone. You're not going to really persuade them. And I found that to be generally true. To my first point, when you talk about facts, I think you've got to be a little bit careful about that. There's some risk, as sort of coming off as a know-it-all. Nobody really liked that kid in class who raised his hand and answered every question. Mm. At some point, you have to sit back and say, look at the other side and say, you know, maybe their points are really good and
let it go.
Disagree respectfully. It is easier said than done. One of the problems I think we have nowadays is that skill is really sort of a lost art, disagreeing respectfully.
Let me get you back into the conversation. Peter, would you agree disagreeing respectfully easier said than done?
I would, and I also really like what Tom was saying about, I don't remember the details, but about going to the Treasury website and getting your facts straight. And it occurs to me that, you know, if that kind of preparation is helpful, to come back to this key on the piano that I keep hitting, emotional preparation is just as helpful, maybe more helpful. And,
absolutely.
And a person who did both would be a wise person indeed. You know, a person who thought, okay, maybe there is something I want to talk about. Maybe I want to talk about, should marijuana be legalized? And why don't I get some data on, you know, does smoking marijuana really lead to heroin addiction? And is it associated with crime or is it not? Or, you know, are too many people put in jail or whatever it is?
Right.
And, but also to do that other part about, is part of the reason that I want to have this argument that I want to show that I'm smarter or tougher or that I won't back down, or is it just an intellectual exercise? From my perspective, the fun political discussions are intellectual exercises.
Right. For all sides.
Yes, yeah. For all sides.
And
yes.
Perhaps even saying, you know, I know that Cousin Jane always gets my goat. I mean,
yes,
that kind of preparation
to be,
as
I would
well.
Be that specific. I know that Cousin Jane gets my goat. And not only that, I know that she will disagree about this. I know enough about her. But I'd like to talk about it. And so I'm going to kind of get myself together to prepare to have, as Tom said, a respectful, non-reactive conversation about it.
Tom, you also say, you know, see the other side.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, nobody is right 100% of the time, though we like to think we are.
We do.
So obviously, if we were right all the time, you know, we'd be president, not, you know, the other guy. Take a look at the other argument and try and weigh its ups and downs and you know, find some common ground with your quote-unquote sparring partner at the table.
And yeah, go ahead, Peter.
Well, you know, one of the things I've been teaching at Chestnut Hill recently is developmental psychology, and we talk about Jean Piaget, who's, you know, a huge figure. And one of his landmark experiments, which he did with another researcher named Barbel Inhelder, is what they call the Three Mountain Experiment. And if you imagine three mountains made out of paper mache, I don't remember what they're actually made out of, and there's a little cottage on top of one, and they look different depending on where you sit. So the experiment involves showing a child all around these mountains and then sitting him or her at one side and asking, what would it look like from the other side? And it's interesting that, of course, very young children assume that it looks just the same to the other child, but around 5, 6, 7, by 7 usually, they're pretty good at this, but it's emotion-free. It's called perspective-taking. And I think that's one of those things we never completely resolve. And when we're stressed, we regress, as you said, Marty, and we forget what the mountain looks like from the other side.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Tom, because you said you wrote this piece in 2012 during the presidential election, and here we are a year later. Do you think tempers have cooled any in the last year?
Well, sure, but the same issues are out there, regardless of whether it's a presidential election year or not. You know, also, I can anticipate sitting down this year, perhaps tomorrow or during Christmas, and talking about, you know, who's going to be the Democratic nominee in 2016, and what about Chris Christie. So while tempers have cooled from 2012, you know, there's plenty of stuff to chew on for 2014 and 2016. The issues are still there. You know, one of the things that I talk about in this article is don't take debate or don't take a difference of opinion personally. I mean, we're talking about issues here. I know it's easy to sort of become insulted if somebody doesn't agree with you, but really, this is not a personal problem. This is not a personal issue. We're talking about national politics. You know, don't get a bruised ego over this.
Well, you know, on that note, Tom, we have to say goodbye to you. I want to wish you a very happy Thanksgiving, and I thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thanks, Marty. Happy Thanksgiving. Thank you, Peter.
Nice talking with you, Tom.
Talking to you.
And that's Tom Merce, digital editor for Lancaster Newspapers. Lancaster Online works as a guide for About.com. And again, Peter Goldenthal staying with us for the rest of the hour. I want to pick up on that political personal issue that Tom just made. And we do want to get some callers in at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Bill Morazzo. As president of WHYY, I thank so many of you for supporting our public media services. Maybe you live in one of the nearly 100,000 households in our area that supported us this year, or you're an employee of a company that has matched those gifts. Perhaps you've donated a used car or volunteered your time. Your kindness allows us to expand our services on air and online. So as the nation gives thanks, please know how thankful we are at WHYY for you.
1, 2, 3, 4!
Volume 2 of The Beatles On Air Live at the BBC has just been released. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with the album's executive producer, Kevin Howlett, who also wrote the new book, The Beatles, The BBC Archives. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY. With another.
Imagine world peace. Okay, imagine Hanukkah and Thanksgiving getting together. Yummy.
You are going to see a lot of sweet potato latkes this year. Brussels sprout latkes.
Won't happen again for 70,000 years. One turkey, 8 days, and a dreidel or two. That's next time on The Takeaway from PRI Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, and we're talking about what can sometimes happen around that Thanksgiving table. And Thanksgiving, of course, one of the most popular holidays of the year, but sometimes when families get together, that can lead to some tense interactions or perhaps even reignite some old wounds or sometimes lead to conflict. And again, we're talking with Peter Goldenthal, a family psychologist here in the Philadelphia area and associate professor of psychology at Chestnut Hill College. And we have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. We'd be curious about what happens in your house when tense issues come up, how your family deals with that. And you can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. Peter, I thought it was interesting when Tom was saying for political issues, don't take them personally. But I think sometimes it's so hard to separate out what one believes politically and from one's personal beliefs, especially if you're passionate about your beliefs.
Well, you know, as I indicated, I think Tom said a lot of really smart things. And, you know, a psychologist, often what we do is help people figure out how to actually do the things that their grandmother or the journalist in Lancaster advised them to do. So it's great advice. And the trick is, how do you do that? I mean, I do agree. And I agree even more than that, that the more things that a person can take not personally,
right,
the easier things go for them and the people around them. But the challenge is how to do that. And that's sort of what I was trying to suggest, is that one way to do it is to think about, okay, it's 30 years from now. I'm looking back. Am I happy that I had that fight? Or do I kind of wish I'd let that go? So that's the backward looking. And the forward looking is, Thanksgiving's coming up. How am I feeling?
Mm-hmm.
Am I generally happy about it? But I'm sort of worried about seeing, you know, whoever it is, Cousin Sally, I think he said. Or maybe I'm even dreading it, but I still want to go. Why am I dreading it?
Right. Doing a kind of inventory of your own feelings. Kind of feelings.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to, you think of social media and how people feel so empowered on a tweet or on a blog or responding to someone's article somewhere to just sort of mouth off. And I'm not suggesting that that has made us a less polite people. I think it's an interesting outlet for people's upset and rage sometimes. But at the same time, it's very different to say something in writing that's kind of anonymous and what it is to say to someone across the table from you that that you actually have a relationship with.
You know, I'm not sure. I'd love to see the research on this, but I'm not sure it has not made us a less polite people. Well, I don't know, and it's not my area of expertise. But I wonder, because you do receive emails that are formatted differently from the way they were formatted before there were tweets. And things get more and more informal, which is not bad.
Right.
But things get more and more blunt, which can be not so good. And I think it does carry. I think it's both. In other words, we've become a busier, more self-absorbed society, and so we don't want to worry about, quote-unquote, niceties. There was a reason for all those niceties. I mean, they kind of lubricated the social gears. But to come back to your point,
yeah,
it absolutely is the wrong thing to do to assume that because you can tweet something or somebody tweeted you or you can email or text message that's what you do when you're across the table from somebody.
But sometimes you can, you know, bring those, in a sense, the experience of those emails with you. I have friends who, you know, get really very extreme, you know, political tweets or emails from people, and they're just horrified that this person would send them that email. Why would they do something like that?
Well, I assume that many of your friends are in journalism, and I bet that they do. Mm-hmm. And why do people do that? I mean, I think you and I would have the same answers.
Yeah.
Because they're not thinking about the other person as a person, and because they can, and at the moment it feels good, or they think it feels good.
Let me get to our callers at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. And again, you can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. Let me see what Mark from Wildwood, New Jersey has to say. Mark, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hey, happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks. Same to you, Mark. Thanks.
Thanks. I sort of have a multi-tier, complicated family situation. Well, first of all, I'm gay, so that complicates everything, because when you're gay, you're a minority in your own family. On top of that, I'm a blended family. I'm like the last survivor of the first family, and my father married another family. So when you don't have like a common childhood, common culture, I mean, it was kind of a forced situation to begin with. I mean, they're all very nice people, but we just don't have anything in common. Mm. And when you add in the political differences, and you just kind of got to sit there and grit your teeth and listen to, like, all these things that just horrify me that they don't even think of that, you know, might be offensive to someone who's gay. It's a pretty ugly situation. And I should finish it off by saying my dad's no longer with us, and the family kind of, like, cast me off, which is fine with me.
Mark, I have a question. Do they know you're gay?
Yeah.
They do. But that doesn't...
Yeah, but I was pretty much told what the rules were. I would not bring someone with me. I would not talk about it. I would not, you know...
Do you want to go?
Discuss certain issues with certain people. I'm sorry?
Do you want to go?
Go? Oh, no. I'm sorry. I thought I explained that. I really don't associate with the family anymore. They pretty much don't include me since my dad died, so... Right.
So, but for you, it's because they're not welcoming to you, Mark, and that's sort of why you're not going to be celebrating Thanksgiving with them.
Well, it's kind of more like I was under orders for pretty much my entire adult life to just shut up and keep the peace. So that's, you know, it's not very nice. So.
Well, I think, I mean, you raise a bunch of different issues about sort of how difficult it is when you sort of don't fit with a certain family model. And Peter, we're also talking about blended families, and that can complicate these get-togethers as well. Mark, thanks for the call. And let me see what Peter has to say.
Thank you, Mark. Well, you know, that's a sad situation.
Yeah.
And I wish that I could say it's a unique situation. There's a confluence of variables that may not occur, but somebody feeling that they are left out or pushed out for a variety of reasons is, it does occur.
Yeah.
And, you know, I could sit here and say, well, the other people are losing out, which sounds nice and is true at some level, but in the present, they're not acting as if they're aware that they're losing out. And so what people often do, as you know, is create their own families.
Blended families.
Their own very blended families, mm-hmm. often with friends. And what is a family? A family is a group of people who care about each other. I mean, if, you know, adoption doesn't, you know, people say, well, a family is, you know, blood connection. Well, not necessarily, right? Adopted children are certainly family. So my perspective is that that's a healthy thing to do.
And Mark talked about the sort of rules. You know, you can do this, but you can't do that. When a family has rules, what does that tell us? What does it tell us about that family? Hard and fast rules, I guess.
Yeah. You know, I can't be specific about, you know, one situation, but there is a huge difference between preference, request, and rules. There's a difference even between saying, you know, your grandmother is very old-fashioned, and when you and your partner come, if you could just introduce him, her, as by name, you know, would you mind? I mean, you know, people may mind.
Right.
But still, the request is different from, you can't bring the person who you've committed yourself to. That seems to me a harsh rule, independent of politics. So I'm not making a political...
No, I hear you.
In other words, even if somebody says, you know, we're opposed to this, so please don't make it a political issue. I think a guest could respect that. Sort of like the chefs who talked about being a vegan guest in a turkey, at a turkey-based Thanksgiving in the previous hour.
Sure. Mark, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let me see what Kathy from Westchester has to say. And Kathy, go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning, Marty.
Morning.
I have a question. I've been to many Thanksgiving gatherings through many, many years, and many have been pleasant, and some have been unpleasant. Mm. And there's been one factor that I have noticed and the unpleasantness, and it's the use of alcohol.
Mm.
And I wondered what you think. What part do you think alcohol plays in these Thanksgiving celebrations that are unpleasant?
Well, Kathy, that's an interesting question. Let me see what our guest, Peter Goldenthal, has to say. What do you think, Peter?
Well, you know, from what Kathy is saying, it sounds like it's not the combination of Thanksgiving and alcohol. It's the people and alcohol, and the people happen to be there for Thanksgiving. I could be wrong about that, but that's what I'm sensing, so that it's not unique to this.
Mm.
You know, it's not a biochemical combination of stuffing and turkey and wine. It's too much wine or too much something else. And, you know, alcohol is a central nervous system depressant, and it lowers inhibitions, and everybody knows that. And there are people who can, you know, use alcohol wisely, and there are people who can't. So I think the question was, if it was a general question, to what extent does alcohol contribute globally to mm-hmm. conflict at the Thanksgiving table? I just don't know.
Right.
But to what extent does the overuse of alcohol cause problems? I don't even think you need me to answer that. We all know that it causes huge problems. To take it one step farther, to pose a question that she could have asked, which I probably can't answer, but I'll pose it anyways. If you have guests coming, or you're at a table where you know that there's likely to be too much alcohol consumed and behavior that comes from that, what can you do? If you're the guest, you probably can't do much except make a plan, an excuse to leave early if you need to. And if you're the host, you can not provide so much.
Right. Limit it.
And if you're the guest and the host is the person who's doing the drinking, I suppose you might want to think whether or not you want to go. It depends how extreme it is.
Kathy, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let me see what Debbie from Aston, Pennsylvania has to say. And Debbie, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I had an experience like the summer of 2012 before the election at my father's birthday party where I got into a discussion with my sister-in-law, and it got very heated. And to this day, I still regret.
Mm.
I mean, I just kind of went ballistic because she was stating all these things as, you know, real facts that she must have got off of some, like, you know, on a radical radio station or something. And, you know, I just, like, went ballistic, and I kind of ruined the party, and I felt really bad about it. And so now, like, before Thanksgiving, like, I try to, like, tell myself, like, just, you know, keep your mouth shut and, you know, don't talk about certain topics because it really, you know, I feel that, like, you know, kind of harmed my relationship with her even to this day.
Have you been able, Debbie, to talk to her about what happened or how you handled it or how you feel now?
Well, you know, we never really talked about it afterwards. I think I did say to her later that day that I was sorry that I got so upset, but we kind of just, like, agreed, like, to, you know, not go there again.
Yeah. Well, let me see what Peter has to say.
Well, the first thing I want to say is, you know, I applaud you for, you know, your self-awareness and for your planning of not kind of getting into this again. You said something about weird facts, and that's one of the downsides of the internet. We all know there are strange things. I mean, this thing that people say that, you know, Hanukkah and Thanksgiving have never occurred together, or they're not going to occur for 70,000 years. There are a lot of people who believe that because it's on the internet. Of course, it's not true, but that doesn't hurt anybody. But there are other weird facts that can be harmful. You know, I was thinking about, you know, Marty's question of, you know, have you, to your satisfaction, kind of made peace with your sister-in-law, and we don't know anything about her, but if she feels as badly about it as you do, maybe, you know, send her a note, call her up and say, Thanksgiving's tomorrow and I'm still thinking about it, and, you know, I don't want to presume to give you advice, you know, but just sort of to consider, maybe you'd like to do a little more, and then, you know, you could feel more relaxed at the table. It sounds like you had a good relationship and there was this argument.
Debbie, thanks for the call to Radio Times, and good luck tomorrow as well. And Peter, I'm just wondering, the fact that she's thinking about it, is there a good chance her sister is also thinking about what happened the last go-round?
I would sure like to think so. However, I mean, you know, to not be Pollyanna, she's thinking, gosh, I wish I hadn't started that argument and I feel badly about it. Perhaps her sister-in-law is thinking, me too. I wish I hadn't taken the bait, but perhaps she's angry.
Right.
So, you know, when making amends, it's always good to be a little bit self-protective. But yeah, I think probably.
And by self-protective, meaning when making amends?
Well, if I'm making amends and I'm aware that I'm counting on the other person to say, yeah, me too, I'm sorry, and I haven't considered the possibility that they may not, then I'll feel hurt all over again. So self-protective would be, I am going to make amends for my sake.
Right.
You know, I feel the need to say, I really regret that. I'm sorry if I hurt your feelings, whatever. No matter what they say, that I'm calling that self-protective. I'm ready for no response.
We're about a minute before we have to say goodbye here, but I'm curious whether, from your own experience, whether you come from a family where people discussed or debated or maybe even argued about politics.
No. The only wrinkle I can add here is that my mother has always insisted that the voting booth is, you know, the sanctity of the voting booth, and she would never tell anybody how she voted.
Really?
Yes, ever. And only very, very recently admitted that she was not, in fact, an independent. So she, you know, she took that the privacy of the vote and the secret ballot very seriously. But we're fairly uniform in our politics.
Well, Peter Goldenthal, thank you very much for joining us today on Radio Times, and happy Thanksgiving to you as well.
Happy Thanksgiving to you. It's been a pleasure, Marty.
A pleasure for us as well. He's a family psychologist with a private practice here in the Philadelphia area. Again, author of a book called Beyond Sibling Rivalry and Why Can't We Get Along? Healing Adult Sibling Relationships. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes and you can find out much more about this program. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you.